Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa.
Thanks for bringing us on the air, Mike, and I'm pleased to be one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with co-hosts Gina McAndrews and Paul Wearson. We're especially pleased to have Paul and Anne to welcome Leanne Harder with the monthly Story County Report.
Well, Leanne, welcome. I'm here by phone, you're here by Zoom, and neither of us had to dodge a deer to get into the station today. I always look forward to your reports. You know, Charles Lawton, the famous actor, it was said that he was so good at emoting by reading literature that he could read the phone book and make you cry. Well, that's what happens, Leanne, when you read the report from the county. So I'm prepared to be emotionally involved here.
Wow.
Go ahead with your report.
Okay, that's quite an intro, Paul. So I'll try my best. I'll add some emotion into it when I get to later on or throughout. I want to start by sharing an important message that we all are hearing, and it's so good to see so many people just pitching in, and as 2020 is coming to an end, we're hearing news about a vaccine, but the pandemic is still very prevalent, and especially in the hearts, making lots of hearts of many heavy. So the message I want to hope everyone will continue to share with us is to mask up Story County. Story County Board of Supervisors approved a face covering regulation back in October. It went into effect on Thursday, October 22nd. And it won't be out of effect. It won't be terminated until the Story County Board of Health says is time to do so. So mask up everyone in Story County. Masks are required when you're in a public setting. And I do just want to quickly say what a public setting is. And this is according to the regulation. A public setting is an area to which the public has access to. It would not include an area to which the public is excluded. This means that any building or office space that the public is excluded from is exempt from the mask requirement. It also specifically exempts a private gathering. So if you have questions about where the mask requirement applies in Story County, there's a question and answer section on our website. And, you know, it's so encouraging to see everyone pitching in. You know, the habits we've all been practicing for, I've lost track of the number of months now, socially distancing, masking, washing our hands, sanitizing, so imperative as we continue to face the pandemic. With that, Story County is going to start putting on social media what the numbers are in Story County for the pandemic and COVID-19 by zip code. So starting maybe later today, if not early tomorrow morning, you can go to social media and see for your specific zip code within Story County what the trends have been and where we are right now. And this will be on a weekly basis. And while many of our buildings are open to the public, Treasurer Ted Rasmussen did want me to remind everyone that if you need to visit the treasurer in person, and the treasurer's office is located in Nevada, the administration building, they are open by appointment only. You must schedule an appointment in order to do business with the treasurer's office. You can, of course, do things online and by phone, but if you want to be in person, schedule that appointment. If you go to our website, you'll see a big red box that says schedule an appointment. You can schedule an appointment using that tab with both the treasurer's office as well as the Story County Reporter's office. They are open by appointment only as well. A very important announcement from Brett McLean with Story County Veterans Affairs. He does want to call attention to retired military that starting in January, you will have a monthly premium for TRICARE insurance. So starting in January, that monthly premium will go into effect if you have TRICARE insurance. Please call by the end of December. And the phone number he gave is 844-866-9378 to enroll. And I think if you guys can get that on your website, too, to help out, that would be great. This past Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors took their final action on the septic ordinance changes. There were three separate considerations of Ordinance Number 287, which is called the Private Sewage Disposal Systems Ordinance. Highlights of the new ordinance include, and there's many, but here's some bullet points. The effective date of January 1st of 2021, so it will, even though it was approved this past Tuesday, it does not go into effect until January 1st. It requires mandatory pumping of systems every 5 years. It sets more stringent setbacks to surface water for septic systems. It does limit shared septic systems. Requirements for soil protection are built into the ordinance. Also, certificates of completion upon inspection of the systems will be required. There are septic requirements for new subdivisions. And the last bullet point to highlight is discharge limits for discharging systems are now set in the ordinance. If you have questions or you want to read the entire ordinance, it is on the website under Environmental Health on our website for Story County. Also, the board last week took action on the new flood insurance rate maps. They call the FIRMS, F-I-R-M, for Story County. That's part of a new flood insurance study that takes effect on January 15th, 2021. Counties that do participate in the flood insurance program, National Flood Insurance Program by FEMA, do have to have floodplain management programs in place and have a detailed study and maps adopted by the board. This may have some impacts, good or bad, depending on what your viewpoint is of the floodplain, but some properties are being added to the floodplain in unincorporated Story County, and some are actually being removed from the floodplain. So if you have any questions on what the impacts might be, call Story County Planning and Development at 515-382-7245, or you can shoot me an email as well, and I can get back to you. Now some news from Story County's animal shelter. Okay, so the cat lovers out there, every week now we are going to be featuring a cat of the week on our website and social media. So this week's cat of the week, her name is Bobby, and she's pretty special. I have dogs, but if I could find room for Bobby in our house, I think I would. I'm not sure our Goldens would enjoy it too much, though. But every week's feline friend is going to be on social media and our website. So go check out Bobby. She might actually, I'm sure some applications will be in filed today for adopting her. Cat adoptions right now are $10. They normally are $30, and dog adoptions are $35. You can actually apply now to adopt your forever friend online. It's something new and exciting that we've just released that the animal shelter has built and put out there. They also have some working cats and barn cats. A working cat or barn cat is a cat that's come into the shelter and actually just prefers a life outdoors with minimal contact. They're great, wonderful cats that spend their time patrolling barns or outbuildings and really help you keep that property rodent-free. Working cats are free to adopt. They are spayed or neutered and vaccinated with distemper, rabies, and worms. So if you're looking for that working barn cat, working cat or barn cat, go ahead and contact Story County Animal Shelter as well. And they're on our website, and the applications are out there as well. Our offices are going to be closed. Story County offices and departments will be closed for the holidays for different dates in December. I want to share those now. Thursday, December 24th and Friday, December 25th, the offices will be closed. And then the following week, offices do close early at 2:30 on Thursday, December 31st, and then closed all day for New Year's Day on Friday, January 1st. So really those last 2 weeks of the, if you have business that you need to get done the last 2 weeks of December, you probably should really be scheduling the third week. Information on online services and information is available by visiting Story County online at www.storycountyiowa.gov. Then my closing message, if you want to follow us on social media, we're on Twitter at Story County Iowa and Instagram at story_county85. Subscribe to our YouTube channel or find us on Facebook. As always, you can contact me. I'm Leanne Harter at lharter@storycountyiowa.gov or 515-382-7247. And my parting comments is I wish, as 2020 comes to a close, I wish everyone health and happiness and looking forward to what 2021 may bring in Mask Up Story County.
Oh, thank you, Leanne. Great report and a lot of great information. Of course, it's all available on the website. I love it when you give your report, except when you tell us the taxes are due. And they're not due now, are they?
They are not. And I'll send you a box of Kleenex before I do that.
Okay, thank you. I need it. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And for those of you who just turned in, Paul Wearson has just been talking with Leanne Harter, who has brought us the monthly Story County Report. During the rest of our program, we'll be spotlighting volunteers who are finding ways to fight back against hunger in Story County. Nearly 1 in 4 children in Story County continue to be eligible to receive free and reduced lunch at their schools. That is a staggering number for a county that has food assistance programs in every community, and hunger doesn't appear as an issue to many.
We assume that many of our listeners know that the United Way of Story County is fighting back against hunger through their collaborative efforts like the Story County Hunger Collaboration and the Food Pantry Collaboration. What many people may not know is just how extensive these collaborations are, with there's 18 pantries countywide, as well as food distribution through schools. Last week, the Food Bank of Iowa reported serving nearly 5,000 people through its mobile food distribution at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. The group says more than 60% were first-time visitors. As I was seeing more first-time visitors to food banks during the economic fallout from the pandemic, so was the annual food drive involving wild game hunters aims to expand its reach. For nearly 20 years, Iowa's Department of Natural Resources has spearheaded a program each fall. And in that program, meat from several thousand deer is donated to the food banks across the state. This year, a new twist connects hunters directly with the families who will receive the donated venison. We have two guests from the Department of Natural Resources to tell us about this program, which is called Hush. Hello, Tyler Harms, a biologist at the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Do you want to start off by telling us what the acronym HUSH stands for and a little about the program?
Sure, I can start. Thank you. This is Tyler. So the HUSH acronym stands for Help Us Stop Hunger. And as you mentioned, Gina, it's a program that provides hunters the opportunity to donate harvested deer to the Food Bank of Iowa to help some of our neighbors in need. It's a really important program for us and has been for several years now. And it results in approximately 130 to 140,000 pounds of venison donated to the Food Bank of Iowa on an annual basis. So just a really great program for us and for the Food Bank of Iowa.
Wow, that's terrific. Now, is there a fee or how do hunters get involved in this?
So hunters are able to donate venison as they choose. We do have a small fee that we assess on each deer license that we sell every year. And then the fee collected is used to pay the processors to process the deer for the Food Bank of Iowa.
Oh, I see. So they bring you the whole deer and then you help find a locker and get that processed?
Well, actually, we have partner lockers that are already signed up. And so the hunters can take the deer directly to a partnering locker. So those lockers are identified in our hunting regulations booklet and on our website. And so they can find those lockers and determine which one is most convenient for them, and they can take the deer directly to that locker without having any involvement from the department on that.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty smooth process you have. Have there been many issues with like wasting disease or, you know, too much lead shot in the meat or anything like that?
Great question. So not to our knowledge at this point, we do processed meat, we do put a statement on the packaging that says that there's, you know, there's the chance for lead to be in this meat, or at least that it was harvested with lead shot, but we really have not seen any issues with either of those things to date. You know, chronic wasting disease, as you mentioned, Gene, is an issue that we're dealing with on a statewide level, and we are encouraging hunters to test their deer prior to consumption and to help us with our surveillance efforts. And we are working to increase our testing of deer that are donated to the Hush program. But right now, at this point, that is the choice of the hunter still.
And this is just during the hunting season, correct? In the fall?
Correct, yes. The lockers are allowed to accept deer at times that are most convenient for them, which for most of those lockers, they're, you know, most of the deer that they're receiving is right now during the hunting season. And so, you know, they'll be processing those deer during this time. Really, there shouldn't be any deer that are getting harvested outside the hunting season, although we do have some programs that allow that, you know, for depredation issues and whatnot. But most of the deer are accepted during the primary hunting season.
And is there like a special card, or if hunters are interested in getting involved in this, how would they do that?
It's a great question. So I would point them to our website. If you're able to visit our DNR website, there will be information on the program and how you can participate. I think a simple Google search of Iowa DNR Hush, H-U-S-H, will get you where you need to go for more information on the program.
And how is the deer population? I know for a while it was pretty high and then it was getting lower, and I haven't heard much lately.
So we're right at our population goal as of current. As you mentioned, in the mid-2000s, we were at peak population, and I think it was agreed by many of our stakeholders that our population was a bit higher than where we wanted it. And so at that point, we embarked on a pretty aggressive management program to reduce the population down to our goal level, which is an annual harvest of 100 to 120,000 deer. We reached that goal level in 2013, and we've been stable at that level since then. So now we're transitioning more into a local management program where we're just dealing with some localized population issues, whether it be above or below population goal at a county level, or perhaps at a, you know, even a an individual farm level or state park level.
Oh, I see. And Joe Wilkinson from the Iowa Wildlife Federation mentioned that they joined in the effort to help recruit more hunters to take part in the deer exchange. Is that helping increase the number of hunters that are involved, or do you need more hunters involved?
Well, you know, we always like to see more hunters in the field. I mean, deer hunting is a really important tradition in the state of Iowa and is a very important recreational opportunity. And so, you know, seeing more hunters in the field is certainly a good thing. You know, from a management standpoint, we harvest enough deer every year to satisfy our management goals for the most part. And that's in large part due to the effort of our hunters. And so we're thankful and grateful that we have a management issue that needs to be addressed. Our hunters answer the call and help us in harvesting deer. You know, a really good example is the issue that you brought up earlier, Gina, with chronic wasting disease. You know, in many of the areas of the state where we have the disease, we do tend to increase antlerless harvest in those areas to try to manage the population at the low end of the goal to reduce spread of the disease. And, you know, our hunters answer that call and help us out in those areas, not only through harvesting more deer, but also through providing voluntary tissue samples to us for our disease surveillance. So we're very lucky to have a great group of hunters across the state that are helpful for us. And you know, we always would love to see more.
Have you seen the number just of overall of deer hunters increase or decrease, or is it kind of about the same over the last couple decades?
So what we're seeing is a very slow decrease in the number of deer hunters over the years. You know, from one year to the next, it doesn't change that much. But if you look at the long-term trend, we've seen about a 20 to 30% decrease in the number of deer hunters across the state in the last 10, 15 years. So it is decreasing. It's not something that we like to see, but unfortunately, you know, it's following the nationwide trend of hunters. You know, hunters are decreasing across the nation and in all areas of hunting, whether it be deer hunting, waterfowl hunting, or you know, any other aspect of hunting. So that's why we're, you know, the DNR and other agencies are putting a lot of effort into determining how we can recruit and retain and reactivate hunters. And some of your listeners may have heard of the term R3, which is recruit, retain, and reactivate, like I just mentioned. And so there's a big nationwide push to try to determine what we can do to retain our hunters that we have now and recruit new hunters.
Wow. How about once in a while in Iowa, you hear of some of the natural predators, mountain lion or bears or wolves coming into the border from the border states. Do you still hear much of that, or is that pretty sporadic?
So yeah, every year we do get reports of some of those larger predatory species. I'm sure many folks heard about the black bear that made the Eastern Iowa tour last summer and ended up down in Missouri. You know, we do have reports of gray wolves and mountain lions in the state every year, but they tend to be pretty sporadic, both temporally and spatially, meaning, you know, they show up at different times of the year, and then they also show up in generally in different areas of the state too. So our fur bear biologist, Vince Evelsizer, is probably a better person to speak on those issues. And I'm sure he would be able to predict where the next one might occur and when. But yeah, it's definitely something that we monitor on an annual basis. And we do have protocols for how to respond to those reports and those animals if they are in the state, and we watch it very closely.
So what are the protocols if they find, like if you see a mountain lion up in Northeast Iowa, the Yellow River area or something?
Yeah, that's a good question. So generally what we try to do is to just, you know, we like to hear about it and we want to know where it is. But oftentimes what we're going to do is just let the animal do its thing. Unless it's really causing a problem to human safety or some other sort of issue, you know, we're just going to watch it and make sure that we try to keep the animal safe and keep our citizens safe as well. So again, the black bear that made the tour through Eastern Iowa last year, it ended up being quite the event for many folks in Eastern Iowa. And I had heard that it was causing some traffic issues along major interstates. he was an attention seeker. He really liked to be, he was loving the attention that he was receiving. The black bear actually received a name, and I can't remember now what the name actually was. Again, that was an instance where, you know, we let him do his thing and, tried to keep our citizens as safe as possible, and then just educate folks about, you know, about these animals and about why they might be in the state of Iowa and moving around and things of that nature. So
it almost sounds like it'd be a good storybook, kid's storybook story.
Yeah, he certainly had an interesting adventure. I know, heard that he traveled quite a long way, so I'm sure he has a great story to tell.
Now, is there much bow hunting in Iowa, or is it mostly shotgun?
No, we do have a significant number of bow hunters in the state of Iowa. Actually, probably about 85,000 individuals bow hunt every year, and we harvest probably 20 to 25,000 deer during the archery season each year. So bow hunting is a really popular sport in the state of Iowa. Shotgun hunting is our most popular season. That's the season here Just this last weekend and actually still ongoing today, the first shotgun season, and then the second shotgun season opens up here this Saturday. We see about 120,000 hunters in the field here in these first few weeks in December. So it's still by far our most popular season and the season during which we see the most deer harvest. But bow hunting is probably the next most popular season for deer hunting.
Is there only bow hunting for deer? Or are there other bow hunting seasons?
You can bow hunt for turkeys as well, both in the spring and in the fall. And so that's an option also.
And Alicia, you're the one that coordinates all this program?
The Hush program. Yeah, the Help Us Stop Hunger program is the one that I coordinate.
And what all do you do?
As coordinator, I definitely rely heavily on folks like Tyler and the Wildlife Bureau and Law Enforcement Bureau, other folks across the agency, but mostly I work with contracting lockers that participate, working with the food bank and our partnership with them on distributing the venison, and they also help us by paying invoices from the lockers and then answering general questions from hunters about the program.
Have you found it hard to find lockers to process? I mean, do they have time and openings?
This year, it's been a lot more difficult, and we're trying to be more flexible this year than any other year that we have been with the program and our lockers. And they are definitely busy, which is great for them. They have a lot of pork processing and beef processing going on. Some are booked out, you know, well into 2021 for their appointments. And what's different about hunting seasons is you don't make appointments because you unknown whether you're going to be successful in your harvest or not, right? And so that throws a little bit of a wrench in their schedule. Most of my lockers that participated in the past have signed up. We did have some take a rest this year with the program, but I'm confident that a lot of them will join back in once things calm down with their other processing, or we'll find ways to accommodate to allow them to participate if that doesn't go down. Because you never know, I guess, if folks are going to continue to send their livestock that they haven't in the past, and they're going to continue to do that because they enjoyed their 2020 experience with their local locker.
Yes, I've had some family members trying to get in, and some are booked till 2022 already.
I believe it.
Is there new lockers opening up? I mean, there seems to be a demand, but I didn't know if you really hear much about that.
Sure. I had one new one this year that opened up. I've been doing the Hush program for about 5 years, and I would say every year we've got two that sell their business or they close their doors, and we've got two or three that open their doors. So I don't know if there's overall growth or if it's just kind of this constant swinging door of how many there are. So if you know of anybody interested, I'd love them to contact the Iowa Department of Agriculture because they would definitely like to work with them and get them set up.
Okay. And then so for the deer and the hunter perspective, the hunter signs up, they drop the deer at one of the participating lockers, and then what happens?
Once they have dropped the deer at the locker, we ask that the hunter fill out a hunter card, which just is basic information that's found on their deer tag, so we can match it up with where it's harvested and everything like that. And the locker then will process that deer down to ground venison that's packaged in 2-pound packaging tubes that we provide. They're marked specifically for the Hush program. They'll contact the person that the food bank has given them to contact, which is usually the closest food bank that's signed up to receive venison, and they will pick that up and distribute it through their local food bank channels.
And then if the food banks want to participate in this, do they need to register, or is everybody pretty much on board already?
They would just have to make sure that they are registered with the Food Bank of Iowa. So I've been learning a lot this year. There's different food banks and different organizations they're set up with, but the Food Bank of Iowa is the entity that they would want to contact to make sure that they can receive this venison directly or order it from the central location, and which is here in Des Moines.
And then if people are interested in going to a food bank that has venison, is there a certain way to find that out?
I mean, they could definitely just contact the closest food bank to them. That probably would be the best route. They can also contact the Food Bank of Iowa headquarters, and they would be able to let them know. They keep a list of all of those that are actively receiving, which I'm sure changes a lot too. This year, I don't know if you remember, but there were other programs like Pass the Pork, some other programs that kind of rose up with the quick need to process livestock. And so I'm sure those locker or the food bank also, they're trying to keep tabs on what they all have for protein, which from what I've heard is always pretty short at those locations, and they love to accept any protein, especially lean protein like venison. So, but yes, I would have them contact their local food bank first, and then if not, the headquarters of Food Bank of Iowa.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. We sure appreciate, and thank you for all your work with the food bank and the deer population and just keeping us all informed of what's going on. And if anyone has any questions, they can email Alicia. Is that correct?
That would be more than great. I would love to answer their questions.
Okay. Her email is Alicia, A-L-I-C-I-A dot Plath, P-L-A-T-H-E at dnr.iowa.gov. Or you can call 515-725-8283. And we will have that on our website at khoifm.org as well. Well, thank you so much, Alicia and Tyler. We sure appreciate having you today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
All right. We'll have a short break before our next guest.
Getting a little older, but I'm feeling real good. A little bit wiser, always hoping I would. Seeing things clearer, clearer than I should. Getting a little older, but I'm feeling real good. Feeling real good. Think I finally saw the light. Things have started going right. That old gleam's back in my eyes. Feeling real good. No bad dreams haunt me at night. Good feelings run deep inside. Feeling real good about my life.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts today have been Gina McAndrews, Susan Franzen, and Paul Wearson. You just heard Gina talking with Alicia Plath and Tyler Harms from the Department of Natural Resources about the HUSH, Help Us Stop Hunger, program for hunters. Our next guest is Patty Yoder.
Gina? Welcome, Patty.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today.
Sure.
We know that every day is probably busy at food at first, but I imagine it might be a little busier this year.
Yes, it has been very busy.
Can you tell us a little bit about Food at First Pantry?
Sure. Food at First is, of course, a perishable food market and a free meal program. We serve a free meal every single day of ever, every holiday, every weekend, every day a hot meal is available in Ames. And we have a pantry with groceries for free pickup 3 days a week on Monday, Thursday, and Saturday.
I imagine with people losing jobs and some people threatened with, paying bills and losing homes, I bet it's a greater job just to keep everyone fed and enough food in the pantry. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, definitely. We have seen a 25%, even pushing higher than that, increase on our meal program. And the people coming for groceries at the free market have been very happy to be able to get a free groceries and help them out that way.
Can you tell us a little more about Food at First and where it's located and how you've adapted to the whole virus situation? I imagine that was a challenge.
Yes, definitely. So we're located inside the First Christian Church at 611 Clark Avenue here in Ames. And we've been in business going on for 12, 13 years now. And we collect food from local grocery stores and restaurants and package it and distribute to anyone at all in need. We're a no questions asked program, so absolutely anyone can come. There's no paperwork, no filling out of anything, or you don't even have to have a ID to come to Food at First. So it's a very friendly place. COVID year has definitely posed issues, as like everyone. The First Christian Church decided to be a locked building in March, and we are still a locked building. So we package everything. We package the meals to go. We package the groceries to go. And so everything is done by carryout. Of course, this takes a lot of extra money to buy all those packaging materials, which we never used to have. That was not a cost in our budget. And it takes a lot of extra time just to get all that packaged up. And since we're in the basement, of course, and thankfully we have an elevator, but it's a lot of work to get it all upstairs and outside. And with the colder weather posed another problem. We built a wooden shed outside, so a little shelter that we can have the food inside and distribute out of that.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
So what kind of schedule, what times do you serve these meals?
So the meals are every day at 5:45 to 6:15. Except for Saturday, it's a lunch from 11:30 to 12. And the free market, the groceries are Mondays and Thursdays from 4:30 to 5:30, and Saturdays from 10 to 11.
And the food pantry is also at the church, or?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's all right there at First Christian there.
And is it all, First Christian is, what's the street address again?
611 Clark Avenue. And we're on the back side or the west side of the church where the parking lot is.
Have you had a lot of big lines for people coming for meals?
We have. Quite often the line stretches clear down the block. We've been serving an average of 126 every single day.
Wow.
Yep.
And who's serving all this? Is this completely all volunteers?
It is. It's volunteers every day that prepare the food, that serve the food, that clean up the food. And I'm the only paid position. So every other person is a volunteer. So it takes a lot of hands to make it happen. We have a group of what we call the gleaners that go out in the community and gather the food from the grocery stores and restaurants and the university and bring it back. And then we have another set of volunteers that organize the food and sort it. And there's some that's not usable, you know, that's maybe a little too far gone, vegetables. And we collect those and have a couple of farmers that pick them up for their animals a couple times.
Oh. And how do you handle, like, if someone wanted to donate food?
Yeah, they can just, we're there pretty much all day. I usually say 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you can just come to those west doors and call the Food at First number, which is on the door. And someone will come up with a cart and we just have them put the food on the cart or the financial donation. We also have a P.O. Box number, P.O. Box 87, if you want to send a financial donation.
So that would be made out to the Food at First?
Food at First, yeah. P.O. Box 87.
Ames, Iowa?
Yes.
50010.
Correct.
What if people have some time and would like to volunteer?
Yes, to volunteer, you go to our website at foodatfirst.com, and it walks you through how to set up an account so you can see the dates and times where we need help. And we receive some of that venison you were talking about earlier.
Well, we'll put your website and your address on our website, and if we'll have more questions or anything, they can give you a call.
Very good.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Patty. We sure appreciate it. And thank you very much for all your hard work.
You're welcome. And thank you for having us.
All right. All right. Take care now. Have a nice holiday.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is KHOY Community Radio. Before we close our show, we need to celebrate activities in towns throughout Story County, which spread light and joy for the season. Paul Wearson is with us today to tell us about one of the big donors to Food at First. Hi, Paul.
How are you, Susan? It's good to be with you again. And a great Christmas season, a time of giving and sharing. And that was great information from Food at First. It was new to me, and I'm really happy with what they do. And look at all the folks they serve. And that's part of the holiday season. And, of course, year-round they help out. So that's heartening to know that an organization like that exists.
Well, I saw a recent article about the Roland Story FFA, which grows food specifically for organizations like Food at First and is a big donor. And I knew you were familiar with the people in the Roland Story FFA, and I thought you could say a couple words about that.
Yeah, the FFA project, I think they've been going for several years now, 6 years. They've had some donated space to have a huge garden, and the kids all volunteer out there as part of their FFA project. And I think they, last year it was 27,000 pounds that they gave to various food banks and charitable organizations. And really, the FFA is such a great organization, and people need to think beyond just the Future Farmer of America title, because there's a lot of life skills involved, and like they learn electrical wiring and wood shop and all these things. And then part of the component is the community service, the volunteering, and that's where this garden project comes in. And they produce all kinds of a variety of produce, and that, of course, that's shared with food banks and charitable outlets all over them. And I really have driven by there occasionally, and there are kids out there working in the fields, and they get the idea that they're part of the community and they're giving their community service by doing that. And I'm sure there are some hot, sweaty days out there, so they not only get community service, but they understand that there's work involved. So I really think that's a great project. That FFA program at Roland Story is very good, as Gilbert and Nevada. They're all outstanding FFA organizations, and they have high participation. I'm sure that Nevada and Gilbert have community service projects also. But the food garden is great. And 27,000 pounds of food, that's great. And a variety of vegetables and produce. And, that's going to be going on forever. And we really hope that people understand that the FFA is an organization that really enables high school kids to participate in not only learning things for themselves, but also community service. And the garden is a great, great thing. I really think they do a good job at Roland Story.
Yeah, there we could go on about Roland Story. They have a wonderful program for connecting the school with seniors in their area. And but we don't have to today. We really have a lot on our plate. to put it figuratively, because we also have a couple Christmas on Main celebrations. One, I'll go over quickly because I know you're going to want to talk about what's happening in Story City, or has happened in Story City. But Slater also has a Christmas on Main, which they've been those reinvigorated by their centennial in 1989, I believe. So it's an annual celebration, but their tree, this year the derecho affected them because they had lost a lot of trees in Slater. But they still found a 40-foot tree that they could put in their traditional place in the manhole in downtown. So that was how they handled theirs, and they put their tree up on November 27th in the evening at dusk, and that's the same time that Story City did. Now I'm going to turn this over to you, Paul, because I know this is a very special event for you personally as well as Story City, right?
Well, yeah, because my grandfather, Oscar Henderson, was one of the founders of the tradition of the Christmas tree. We've had a Christmas tree in Story City in the main square since 1913 or thereabouts. And actually, Oscar was one of the, he was a farmer who owned four farms by today's standards. He was a wealthy man and involved with all the business people downtown. And they decided they should have a big Christmas tree. And ever since that happened, we've had someone donate a tree every year. And Oscar probably would think that what we're doing now is underdone, because the tree is always anchored by tie wires that attach to the buildings on the corners for stability. And when you look at the picture of Oscar's tree, the original one in 1913 or so, he has the guy wires lighted also. Not only the tree, but the guy wires. Now, we don't light the guy wires, so if Oscar was around now, he would say that the tree is a little underdone, probably. You know, he was pretty flashy in his taste, and he thought that would really be nice if all the guy wires had lights, too. And this year, at Story City, we have a particularly great tree. Every year somebody donates a tree. They're about 20, 30 feet high. And as I say, anchored by guide wires. And this year is the most perfect symmetrical tree right out of nature. Now, I saw a feature on CBS Morning News the other day about the tree at Rockefeller Center. They had a picture of the tree when it was first erected. And it looked kind of, I would say, it lacked continuity. And they spent a couple of days, 24/7, adding branches to make the tree symmetrical, you know. And then I look at the tree here in Story City and I think, there's a perfect tree right out of nature. So at least this year, the score is Story City 1, Manhattan 0, because we have a perfect tree right out of nature. And I do believe that briefly, during the war, they replaced the tree one year with Santa and his sleigh. And that went over like a lead balloon. So it was only one year in all this time that there wasn't a big Christmas tree at the city square at Story City. And I'm proud to say that this year, if you stop by and drive up through Story City, you will see an actual, perfect, symmetrical tree right out of nature. Someone donated this tree from their own property, and it looks artificial. It's that perfect. So very proud of the tree this year. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And I'm sure that my grandfather is looking down with great approval, although he probably wishes we had lit the guy wires too. But you know, at that time of the year, I love Christmas carols too, and that's actually, I'm sure it was at Slater and at Story City too. We have a big ceremony normally where we sing Christmas carols. It was all done, I think, on Facebook this year. we did respond to COVID-19.
And thanks to virtual Christmas, which is what we have this year, we have recordings, as Paul said, on Facebook. And I was able to record the one from Story City and play a little bit for you.
Try as he might, when Sven touches the tree, it just wouldn't light. When the Grinch said, "Let me try, maybe I can get it to start," as he reached for the tree with a wish in his heart. Ever since his heart grew 3 sizes that day, it's been filled with Christmas cheer to guide him the way. So he reached for the tree with a heart full of cheer. When the Grinch touched the tree, it lit for this year.
I'm going to be the first, Jeanette, and Susan, to wish you a Merry Christmas. I know it'll happen many times over, but let's do it now, right on December 9th. How does that sound?
That sounds terrific. And a Merry Christmas to you as well, Paul.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, Story City Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts today have been Gina McAndrews, Susan Franzen, and Paul Wearson. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Lisa Plath, Tata Harms, and Patty Yoder.
You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Thank you very much, Mike. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI Community Radio serves Story County, Iowa. Our mission is to build community through grassroots communication. We welcome all voices and celebrate diversity in our community. Please remember that your support is essential if we are to continue broadcasting. So if you consider becoming a sustaining member at $20 a month or $250 a year, please do. But we appreciate whatever you can afford. A basic membership is just $5 per month or $60 per year. You can pledge or bring a check to 410 Douglas or online at khoifm.org, where you can hit the yellow donate button, become a member.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends and be sure to keep on listening. Remember, your participation as a listener, as well as your generous contributions, are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again on the radio.